My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first-timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change-ups, the cast won't break up. Even with that million-dollar contract, show up a stand-up guy who's a stand-up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert, recording this episode on Friday, November 11th, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to shows. Give the show a five-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and subscribe for $3 a month for hours and hours and hours of bonus content. This is episode 610 or 11 or 12. It's one of those. I'm not alone. I'm here with a cavalcade of superior podcast guests, all of them friends of the show. I have Tim Hall, a.k.a. the People's Critic, and I have Ron and Karen from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Everybody, how are you guys doing?
Great. Good. Thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you guys here. We're here to discuss Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And we're just going to have a free-flowing conversation about this Ryan Coogler's fourth film, I believe. I think it is. And I'll just start by saying I don't think Ryan Coogler has missed yet, but I want to throw it all out to my wonderful guests. We'll start with Karen. Karen, what, give me some of your overall thoughts on Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I kind of, from the previews, you know, when they first started promoting, I mean, they had promoted, but when we first got like the trailers and things like that, I was like, oh, this is going to be heavy. You had a feeling it was going to be heavy anyway, but I was like, oh, this is going to be heavy. And particularly anybody who has had death, like really close to the heart, not somebody afar off. I'm talking about like somebody that you actually knew when you woke up and y'all had like real interactions. It, you know, it was going to remind you of these people, because they actually go through like a actual funeral service and things like that. And it was one of the things where I was prepared, but not prepared, if that makes sense, you know, because you don't really know how you're going to feel. And as we was talking about before, like Tim said, if you've lost somebody close to you, you never know what's going to trigger that. It could be a sound. It could be a smell. It could be a look. It could be a flower. It could be literally could be anything. And next thing you know, you're in your feelings about it. And so I know for a lot of people, it might be, this one might be not as cheerful as the first one, if that makes sense, because the first one was more of an event is yay, we here. But this one was like, okay, now we have to go through a mourning process and then we can go on with the rest of the movie. And I appreciate them doing it up front and kind of, I don't want to say getting it over with, but letting people know that we have, like, the world has got to move on. The people have got to move on. And we can't stop the whole MCU because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Rod?
I felt about this film the opposite of how I imagined J.L. Covan will feel. I felt
Shots fired.
I felt a deep spiritual connection to my people and a vast empathy for Blackness throughout the diaspora. And I knew that this is going to be heavy lifting. We've never had something like this happen in a Marvel film, off screen coming into real life. And, I was wondering how they would handle it and how much of the capitalistic corporate enterprise that is Disney would have to, you know, touch this film. And, you know, oftentimes it's hard to make those two things work together, but I thought they did it great. And I left the film feeling like they should hand the MCU reins over to Coogler, because I think he can handle it.
Mm-hmm. Tim, how about you?
The same, kind of echo what Rod and Karen both said. I thought it was a beautiful tribute. I mean, it was such a bold way to start the movie. Like, they dropped us right into, like, Shuri in the lab trying to figure out how to save her brother. And for me, to Karen's point, like, my dad loved drums. Like, he drummed his whole life. Aww. I brought him back this hand-carved drum from Ghana. And so when they were drumming and all that music was playing, like, the tears coming, and I was like, it's okay to cry in this movie. I didn't end up crying. But there's these moments when you're watching people mourn so openly. And for me, especially that scene when Shuri kind of runs back to the casket, almost got me. Like, but to me, the opening is so raw and get right to, you know, Queen Ramonda at the UN, and he gets right back to sort of the Marvel superhero shit, I thought was a great way to start it. And like, hey, the world's moved on. It's a year later, and let's see what's happening. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I echo everything that you guys are saying. I mean, it's almost like it's a, and I'm not placating to Karen, but it's almost like how it's a testament to how when shit gets fucked up, how Black women clean it up.
Yeah.
You can think about the oil spill that happened where they had the Black lady come out and say, hey guys, we know we fucked up. This is some fucked up shit. We'll fix it. Like anytime, like, you know, just how they had to handle it, how the vulnerability. I was really impressed by Letitia Wright. Like, I never had a problem with her as an actress. Mm-hmm. I always thought she was very good. Mm-hmm. But then this, I guess I don't, and I guess maybe it's my love of video games, to where I enjoy playing with the female characters more, because they have the strength that they can do the job, but then there's this vulnerability. And it's not always masked with arrogance from male characters that we would see. And a lot of times where you just think like this, you know, like Rod coined the impossible white man and those type of characters that just go, they're so gung ho. But I really appreciated her performance. I mean, maybe we'll go into more depth, but I was telling Tim earlier, before we started recording, I got emotional when she went to the ancestral plane, and we'll talk about that later, but I thought that I was gonna cry at the top, but I didn't. I was locked in, but it's something that I think I quoted, I think Aaron Rand Freeman said this, and I'm gonna paraphrase, but I believe that I did read his quote from Facebook, whichever episode that's called The Homegoing for Chadwick, when one of those trailers got released, the first one, I guess. And he was just saying, we've never, like Rod said, we've never seen anything like this. It's unprecedented for a corporate giant to say, well, to put things aside and say, we got this franchise that made a lot of money. We lost the main actor. We're going to have a cinematic funeral for this guy. And we're going to sit in that. We're going to pause and we're going to celebrate this guy. And then we're going to move on with our big corporate monster, gargantuan entertainment show.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty remarkable. And I don't think we may not ever see anything like that.
Yeah, they called it the official like end to Phase 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like it.
Yeah,
like all the way to the after credit scene, it felt like Phase 4 was a lot about survivor's guilt and loss and grief. And almost every product in Phase 4 was kind of like that. There were a couple of introductory like hero movies, but most of them were like, you know, Black Widow and like phasing out stuff. And, you know, even Scarlet Witch is, you know, WandaVision is very, very much about grief and sadness and moving on. So, and then that post-credit scene is giving you like the hope, kind of like,
right,
or the look towards like the future. It continues. they just nailed it.
Yeah, I appreciated the fact that how grounded it was, the grounding in reality more so than anything we've seen in the MCU. The cinematography from Autumn Durald, just fantastic. And it and then, you know, I was looking at some of the reviews and just some going surfing on YouTube and stuff like that. And they were talking about how they, I don't know, it's like even the black critics just seem to just not, they seem to just be, I don't know what they wanted. I don't know what they, I don't think if they recast T'Challa, if that would have been, they would have had a problem with that. If they said, got Tyrese. This Tyrese is going to do it.
And yeah, it would have just been a different set of issues. I think a lot of people talked themselves because they've been arguing online a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of them talked themselves into like, this is the correct answer. Mm-hmm. I am the smartest person in the world and everybody agrees with me. When really it's like, if they did something as callous as kind of like just recasting the dude and moving on with not much of a tribute to the actual loss of this human being, people would have been like, man, fuck this film for those reasons. You know, like it was just gonna be what it was. And I think it's huge to see the big monster that is, you know, the big capitalist corporate monster go, nah, we have to do this right. We have to do right by this man. We have to do right by his friends and people on set that knew him. And this movie was a difficult fucking movie to pull off where you have to rewrite the whole thing after this man dies. Shuri, the actress Letitia Wright is anti-vax and you have a big thing with that. She gets hurt on the set. That you have a big thing with that. Like this movie had a lot working against it. I can't knock people if they like noticed or feel like, oh man, it doesn't feel, you can feel that it didn't go off without a hitch. That's fine. But I think a lot of us that like it are liking it in a context. We're not just like absentmindedly go, you know, like we're like, no, we're aware of what the Herculean effort had to be. And that's why we're so appreciative of it.
Yeah. It felt- Oh, go ahead, Karen.
I'm just saying, yeah. And also, I think it stayed true to the spirit of Black Panther and Chadwick. The reason why I said that is because most people, how can I say this? Most people that was like Black Panther, yay, black man, and they didn't really pay attention to anything else going around it.
Right.
Yeah.
He listened to the women. After he did his own thing, fucked up and was like, y'all know what? I'm sorry, y'all. And he ended up doing what all the women around him told him to do. So it was already woman centric, even though they might not have been the star. But excuse me, it was still woman centric. And this time they go, well, we don't have Chadwick here. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take the people that he was listening to and put them in the forefront now. Right. And I think for a lot of people, it was a rejection of that. It was just a rejection of, it's not black man centric. A percentage of people was, it's not black man centric. Well, then why am I here for a lot of people? And the thing is, it's like, well, Black Panther can move on. There's been different variations, different versions of him. Different people have put on the costume. All these things have happened before. It's not like this; these things aren't unknown. But I think a lot of people was black man and nothing else. And going back to what Chris said about, you know, them being women and how they have to think outside of the box. It reminds me, you're talking about video games of Lara Croft in Tomb Raider. Mm-hmm. Because she could do all these things, but she couldn't do it just like a man. So they had to do alternative things to show their strength, but it's still strength in it without it being a manly strength. It's still strength. It's just a different form of it. And so all these different women showed their different forms of strength in variation of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to laugh at me, but I mean, you can only tell a story. There's only like 5 to 7 stories that you can tell. And it's really just the way that you, when you're dealing with media. And damn if I didn't think that there was some Last of Us 2 vibes with this.
Of course.
You guys are going to laugh, but if you know it, Rod at least knows the story.
That's your jam.
It's my shit, but it's like...
I don't blame you.
I felt that shit. Like, I was like, okay. You know, and one thing I was like, oh, shit. You know, like, we were thinking about Everett Ross and what's his wife? What's Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character? I was trying to look it up.
Oh, Dave Fontaine.
Yeah. And when they were talking to, and he was like, you know, we had these people have these resources. They have not attacked us.
Yeah.
What will we have done if we had all of that power? Yeah. That's some real fuck. That's some bars. That shit that we've talked about on our podcast all for years. And to put it out there like that, that's a lot of shit that people don't want to really hear. And how you have I want us to talk a little bit about Namor and his origin story. Yeah. How these black and brown people are living pretty good, and blue. They're living good without white folks. Mm-hmm. And people, they come in and they mess it up. I don't even think it's thinly veiled. It's just out there. Like, we were living good until y'all fucked it up. And a lot of people don't want to really hear that, because I went to I saw it in a white movie theater, like in a white area, and it was relatively silent.
That's the truth. And the thing is, the whole thing with them in the UN meeting and things like that, I was like, yeah, that makes sense. She was saying, now I let y'all talk, what do y'all tell me? How dare y'all have this and y'all don't share it and blah 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 blah. She was like, we don't share it because of us. We don't share it because we know what y'all would do. And here is proof. Y'all basically tried to break in our shit.
Yep.
Yep.
And didn't think we knew.
Yeah. And even so talk about what did you guys think about Namor as a villain, the anti-hero, or what have you? How did you guys feel about his character and his story?
I thought he was very compelling. This is once again another time where Coogler, two villains in a row, basically wrote a compelling character that wasn't two dimensional, that wasn't just a I'm a bad guy, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. And you know, I think as black people and as Wakandans in the movie, there's a sympathy for the character and an understanding that is immediately there, that is just, it wouldn't necessarily be there if it was a white movie or a white character. Mm-hmm. You know, like if he was talking to Captain America, they wouldn't even have sat there and exchanged philosophy the way him and Shuri did. You know, the idea of like, we just want to be left alone. We're an isolationist nation. You guys got us under threat by coming out to the world. Mm-hmm. And y'all motherfuckers need to help us fix this. And even his final conceit of like yielding to her was a strategic move, mm-hmm. because he knew how fucked up this world is and that Wakanda is going to always be under attack. And at some point they will reach back out and they will be allies. And I thought that was a great way of like ending it without having to like, you know, nerf Namor and have him get beaten and or get killed or something or like, because his ego is next level. He thinks he's a god. That motherfucker would have been like, man, then kill me then, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. but when, because I like when he did that in the movie, I was like, oh, okay, it's a different version of Namor. And then in the post credits or whatever, he's like, yeah, they gonna come to me, don't even worry about that. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, it would just be a part of a strategy for this dude to ultimately conquer the entire fucking world, which is what he's still after.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Tim? How'd you feel about Namor?
I mean, I loved him as a character. Like, he's probably my favorite MCU villain so far. And to Ross's point, like, he wasn't just like, you know, a cackling villain. Like, back in the day, Someone was a villain, you know, if you just tied someone to the train tracks, you were immediately evil with no context. But and he's on the beach, like, he very accurate, and he's very much a man of principle. He's like, this is what y'all did. You got us fucked up. I need you to fix it. If you don't fix it, I'm coming back. And that scene he's showing Shuri Talokan, and it's just this beautiful scene. And he says, yeah, So now you know why I gotta kill this. See what I'm doing this for, right? Like, all these people is great. It's why I got it, because they can't be building more machines and they can't come down here. They're gonna ruin this thing that we built. And even the flashback when he takes his mom back to get buried and there's all these conquistadors up there. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, y'all fucked up. Like, kill y'all, bury my mom, and then get back to where we from.
I low-key thought he was macking her a little bit too. He had her dressed up in his people's garb.
Yeah.
And he's telling her. It felt like he was kind of putting the moves on her. I really liked it. It's just another perspective of how white people to try to colonize. And even, you know, let's talk about that beginning of, you know, post the funeral for T'Challa, that really intense, ominous scene with them infiltrating the Wakandan Foundation, like the
Mali, the
site where they're trying to excavate the vibranium. Mm. And I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. That I really loved, like, stylistically, it's like, man, could we? I'd like to see Coogler do some horror. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, especially when, and I, you know, no disrespect, I'm sorry, Chris, but especially when Lake Bell dies.
I was gonna say it, but I'm glad you.
I knew
said
you
it.
Would.
Yeah.
I knew.
Yeah.
Because I did feel like they kind of wasted her in the film because she's enough of a name that I thought people would be like, oh, she's in this.
Yeah.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, she's drowning in the sea. You're like, oh, I guess. And I thought maybe they would cut to like she was a prisoner. It's like, nah, she just dead. No.
Yeah.
But it was. It wasn't just the character and his motivation and the writing and the acting. It was also how he moved.
Yeah.
Like, I peep shit during the action scenes of like how he moved in the fights, in the battles. Like, the fact, you know, one, he throws her fucking helicopter in the ocean and then he's flying in darkness and in shadow and you just see the silhouette. But, you know, and like when he rose out of the water by floating on the Wakandan shore. Versus when he walked out of the water like a James Bond vixen and walked up to Queen Ramonda. That was different. And then, of course, mostly when he was fighting, the way that this motherfucker moved on the air, where it was like he was stepping on the air because of his wings. And it made him just impossible to fight. Like, it was just like he was just fucking everything up, no matter what Wakanda threw at him. It was amazing.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, my biggest shock was, I mean, if you kill Lake Bell, I mean, with shit, then you kill Angela Bassett. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, I was not expecting that.
No, I didn't either.
But then there was a critic, I think it's Movie Files. Elliot from Movie Files was talking about how he was like, Coogler likes to play with death. Creed and then Black Panther, like how characters, there's a big death in a character's life that forces them to reevaluate things or do things like that. One of his themes that he likes to deal with. I did not see that coming. I was everybody knows that, you know, Riri Williams isn't gonna die because she's got a TV show.
Right.
And then you kill Ramonda. I was bummed out about that. I was just like, what? Oh, yeah. Can't she just be injured?
It was supposed to be.
Yeah.
That was the whole purpose. Yeah. And who knows, that right there might have been in his original script anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, he just kind of worked around it with Shiri, you know. Yeah. So, like, it's one of those things where we don't know what his original script was.
I think also it was the thing that took Shuri to that dark place, right?
Yeah.
Because it was you lose it. Like, I think I said this on our review. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're watching her go through the five stages, you know, of grief, the whole movie, like, and like restarting after her mom gets killed. Like, it's, you know, she's in a huge amount of denial after T'Challa is killed. And then, you know, because of her scientific atheistic leaning, she doesn't believe in all the spiritual plane stuff that everybody else does, even with proof, you know, in their version of the world. You know, there's a level of proof that is there, and she still doesn't believe it. And then to watch her like start to accept it, and then boom, her mom's killed.
Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck, man. And the brutality of that last fight between her and Namor, when she ripped his fucking wings off,
that was brutal.
His foot, and then she fucking like fries this nigga with the ship. Like, you're just like, oh my, how savage is Shuri? Like, Shuri really went to that kill. That's why she saw Killmonger. Like,
yes,
yeah,
she was that fucking gone, man.
That was okay. Now, did you guys, before we get into that, did you all have a problem with her being able to be skilled enough to beat Namor's ass?
No,
no. Mm-mm. That's like having a problem with T'Challa doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, right.
Why we have a problem with it?
Superhuman strength.
This only comes up when it's a woman, right?
I would've said that,
right? Is Rey in Star Wars? It's, yeah. Like it don't seem that it, when it's a dude that we had this conversation with.
Right. And they did things to show you how super strong she was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she basically lied to them, and then she punched that thing and it went. And everybody was like, damn. I was like, yeah, you thought you could lie to them, but bitch, you just punched that thing as hard and like with no strength, and it went through the wall. Yeah. So they emphasized how strong she was.
I just asked you guys because that seems to come up. Like, that, I was like, why did that matter?
It's only because it's a woman.
I'm just noticing it. It mostly only comes up when I see it, when it's like a woman.
And the film literally explains like how they're going to weaken him.
Yeah.
To weaken him, we need to do this. And then she takes him to the desert. Like, all that makes sense.
Right.
Keep in mind, they don't spend a second showing Namor's training or anything.
No.
Right.
Like, it's not like we go, oh man, because he got all this battle testing and shit. It's like, this nigga whooped people ass for slavery, went back in the water for 200 and something years. Yeah. And then just came out kicking the military's ass. And we were like, yeah, that probably makes sense.
That sounds right.
Yeah. But then like this scientist, Wakanda, is like, I need to get a Rocky montage of her lifting weights. It's like, you know, it's kind of like something I've seen a lot of the like, Gamergate-ish dudes pull out on movies like this, but I feel like we literally don't require proof from anybody else.
Yeah, and what's the difference between this and Captain America and the super serum? Like, it's no difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we had there was no training or anything that showed that Steve could fight when he weighed 75 pounds and shit. It wasn't like, oh yeah, it was basically like he got heart.
He got the
super soldier serum, and it was like, now he got all the muscles and heart.
Yeah, now he's Canelo Alvarez all of a sudden.
Yeah,
that's how I felt about T'Challa. I was like, you root for the guy, he's right. Got the suit, and so it's really about the person in the suit, and you expect them to step it up because it's a fucking superhero movie,
right?
I've really. The part that moved me the most, and I'll go back, we'll get back to this now, was just that moment where she makes the synthetic herb, and she goes on the trip, and it's like, I was just like, okay, she's gonna see her mom, because then, you know, watching the trailer, she says, Ramonda says, show them who you are, whatever the line is, and I'm thinking, okay, she's gonna see, oh no, it's Killmonger. And I was like, oh, that's about right. And I thought, I said, that's about right, because that's that anger. Mm-hmm. He is wrong. The way that he went about his plans were wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think he played it almost pitch perfect, but it was a part where I want to go back and I'm going to go see it again. But it's a part where he got loud and he didn't need to get loud. It's like, you're Michael B. Jordan. You're Killmonger. We know who you are. You don't have to get mad. You don't have to get angry. You're like, yo, you know why you chose me. You know why I'm here. So go do that. Because your brother couldn't do it. Your daddy was this way. Your brother was this. Who are you? And it's like, that's the thing that's interesting, to where you know what's right. You know Killmonger's wrong. And you understand that, but it's like the process to where Shuri has to process, like, fuck, this is how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I'm going with this, and I'm going to fucking kill this guy. And the courage enough, the cojones enough, the vaginal fortitude to say, to go to M'Baku, who's this big motherfucker. I'm like, yo, you owe me.
Yeah.
We need to do, we got to do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. And that could have been, you know, that was where I was like, oh shit. I was like, really? I was like, oh man, that just moved me. That whole sequence was just, it was super powerful for me.
And my thing was, she allowed the race to consume her because I think that she knew what was going to happen when they let that woman die. And then you find out who that woman was. I was like, oh, it's a war. Because she was like, no, I can save her. Just give me a few minutes. And I honestly think if she would have saved her and gave her mercy, it's not that Namor wouldn't have been mad, but he wouldn't. I don't think it would have been like all that war like it was. It was like, oh, you killed somebody that was important to me and my child. Yeah, I have no compassion. We ain't going to talk. Ain't no more compromising. And then she basically set her people up to die because they were literally on the edge of the ship about to, because he told her, hey, it's a lot of us down here, more than y'all think. Like, y'all fuck with us, we gonna basically take over the earth. And everybody underestimated him. It's like, you taking your people to war to die over rage.
And that's a great point, Karen. Did anybody else like get middle passage vibes from that ship?
I did not.
Just the way the ship was designed, it made me think of that diagram that you always see in the history books. Mm-hmm. I felt like I'm not trying to sound cool or anything, but it just felt like I'm noticing this. But it just felt like it was just like, ooh, all those black folks on that ship, and then it could possibly be overturned. And I felt very uneasy by that.
It was slavey for you, huh?
Yeah, it was very slavey. I felt uneasy. I felt like they were gonna lose. And I felt like the Wakandans needed to fucking compromise because that was gonna be their ass.
Yeah, they definitely took it to that like last fucking possible breath with them almost about to get pushed overboard. There's just so many fucking Atlanteans that was up on them. But I'm not gonna lie, I didn't feel the slavey vibes from it though.
Yeah. What about go ahead?
You were talking about sort of Namor sort of responding to this death, like. Marvel has been really good at like capturing grief in its films.
Mm-hmm.
The Spider-Man movies, like Thor's whole journey from, you know, Ragnarok through Endgame. I love that scene in the Endgame when he wants to wear the gauntlet. And what he says is like, let me do something good. Like he feels like he hasn't done anything good. He's let people down. He didn't kill Thanos. His people's dead. His brother's dead. His homeboy's dead. Doctor Strange is all about loss, like that whole this is WandaVision. WandaVision, they do a really good job of capturing it and putting it in a film in a way that's digestible, and people don't realize they're watching these characters grieve through the worst times of their lives and try to come out the side of it.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, trying to come out on the other side. Yeah. I think I'm gonna have to see this again. What format did you guys see this in?
3D.
Yeah, 3D.
IMAX. It's just a regular IMAX for me.
Okay. I just saw it like standard definite, but at a really nice, I saw it at a Landmark theater and it was really nice, but I think maybe I'm going to have to do Dolby or IMAX. Probably not.
I think the good thing for the 3D was the Avatar trailer.
It
hit you with that like, oh yeah, that's right. James Cameron know what to do.
Yeah, and this is something I said and I will continue to say it. Nobody has done 3D since that Avatar. Nobody has even come close to what he has done. Everybody is a 3D up-res, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. He was like, no, I'm actually going to shoot this in 3D. And everybody was like, we're going to shoot it and we're going to throw it on the backside. It's not the same. Even with this Marvel movie, it was good. But you could watch it IMAX and standard and be just as fine. Yeah. But when that Avatar popped up, I was like, this is the 3D. Things was floating out in front of you. You wanted to reach out and touch it. And I was like, yeah. And people have a selective memory. That movie didn't make up $1 billion just because. Like, everybody won't act like that Woods of, it's a story about fairies, the gun fairies, whatever they want to call it. Whatever. Bitch, you watched that thing 10 times. So so I don't care what you say. Y'all enjoyed it. And most of you going to go watch this one too. Even if you just go to talk shit, you're going to have your ass up in there like everybody else spending your money.
Yeah. I'm going to see it. Yeah, I need to see the first one again because I think I saw it on a bootleg copy.
You saw a bootleg version of Avatar?
You know, it didn't interest me back then. I didn't really care, but I saw like a shitty bootleg copy. So I'll get it on Blu-ray or download it, or not down, you know, illegally, but just like rent it or something.
It's not Disney Plus, is it? Or something?
Is it? It might be. I don't know.
Which one?
Avatar.
Oh yeah, it's on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I'll watch it. I'll definitely watch it.
Go ahead, Karen.
It's on. I put it like this. It's good watching it, but if you want like the true experience, I tell people, it is actually what 3D is meant to be. Like when people say something is made for the movie theaters, that was literally, you had to actually go to the movie theaters because you're not going to get the same effect. Uh-huh. You know, as you would sitting in there and literally everything is popping out on a 1,000-inch screen. That's different than watching on your 120-inch TV. Like, you know, you can watch it and go through the experience, but the experience is not going to be the same.
Let me ask you guys this. What did you all think of Ironheart? What did you think of Riri?
I liked her. You know, the straight backs definitely took me back to just Nelly, you know. But the thing for me was, I thought they did something interesting here. This didn't really feel like her origin story.
No.
Like a lot of times the MCU does this thing where they put someone else's origin story in someone else's movie, and then they give you a movie or a TV show or something, and we already know your origin. Like they did with why am I drawing a blank? America Chavez in The Last Doctor Strange. Mm. Like that's her origin story. Oh, she got her two moms. They went into this portal. She couldn't find them. Like it's not deep, but it's just enough to be like, oh, that's where she gets this from or whatever. This shit was like, she just shows up kind of fully formed. Like,
yeah,
I'm an engineering student. I'm a prodigy. They aged her up a little bit. I'm from Chicago. We don't get how her folks died, like, because there's like some violent shit with that. We don't get the inspiration between her and like Tony Stark, even though you can clearly see it in her armor.
Yeah.
And it feels like they're saving that for the Armor Wars movies, TV series, or whatever they decide to do, or Ironheart, or she gets her own series. It feels like they're saving that. And I actually thought it was good because I don't think they had time to do all that shit. Like, it just felt like if you're going to put her in here, people just need to think she's a cool character and want to see more of her rather than feel like she belongs to this universe, you know, because she's black, but she ain't Wakandan. So it didn't even really make sense to like have her like and come back for Black Panther 2. Like, it was kind of dope. It was like, here's your car. We keeping the suit. Bye.
Yeah. I like when she said, you know, you can't keep the suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. The movie did something really subtle that made me laugh. So when Shuri goes up to the dorm room, like, none of these white people recognize her. But immediately, she's like, oh, my God. She knows who she is. Like,
yeah.
We recognize our own. Like, all jokes aside, like, we recognize us. Like, it's a lot of people that are black famous. White people go, who?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked her. I think the suit is fine. I bought the action figure. I like the comic book version better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she's probably going to do, maybe when the show comes out, it's probably going to be different, closer to the books. But I liked her moment. I thought the movie did a good job. I was seeing some reviews where, oh, so-and-so didn't have enough to do. But it's like, you're spreading out. I think each character had something to do. Like, I felt like it was measured out pretty well under the umbrella of Shuri having to progress through the story, for her having to have an arc. I thought that was the most important thing in this film. Even though, just as a fan, I was excited to see what Ironheart was going to be like. I remember texting you, Tim, saying like, yeah, I'm excited to see what Ironheart's going to be. Like, I'm interested in that. But the closer we got to the film coming out, I was more excited to see what are you going to do with Shuri. And I was honestly, I think I was kind of blown away by Letitia Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a great showcase for her. It makes me want to go back and look at some of her other stuff. But
it was also cool in those moments when like Riri was on screen with Okoye and Ramonda and Shuri. I think also as a Black American, you know, we've always wanted to insert our place in this, you know, to like see ourselves. And, you know, as much as I love Black Panther, the kind of American Blackness was Killmonger, you know. And in this, and which I didn't have a problem with, I know as many niggas that had a problem with, I didn't have a problem with that, but this one was like, and here's another example of this kind of like non-toxic connection with Blackness. And even just the dialogue and the scenes that they had together, you know, was just like kind of funny and light compared to some of the more somber notes of the film.
Yeah. And, Karen.
And also something that I liked about it, we were talking about grief. Not only did Shuri go through grief, it's like everybody went through grief in their own different ways. Mm-hmm. And even the queen, when she lashed out, it was like, yeah, that's coming from a place of hurt, you know, from you basically be like, you know what? I'm mad. I'm angry. I told you she shouldn't have went with you in the first place. And I was like, oh, but it was hilarious. It was not hilarious, but I looked at the screen when she told her she could. I was like, what? Before I knew it, I was just at the screen like, no.
The Okoye scene when she.
Yes. Yeah, yes. And the thing is, Okoye is going through her own grief, too, because, you know, she is like, my job was to protect him and I couldn't even protect him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think everybody got their chance to shine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we just kind of went in. I think for the most part, people knew that Shuri was going to be Black Panther. So it's essentially her movie and Namor's. Yeah. So it's like, what are we doing here? Why are people surprised about that? Mm-hmm. I don't understand why, you know, you're surprised about that. And you get these characters like Okoye have an arc. Riri has an ark. M'Baku was just there. He was a supporting character, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe when the series comes out, he's going to have a more prominent role. But he did his thing, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what, Chris? And not trying to be funny, I appreciate them understanding his role. And I don't mean that in like a mean way. But a lot of times, like, they'll take a character like that and raise their profile up when it actually doesn't need to be raised up. When, not trying to be funny, if that was a woman and it was man-centric, most of the time they don't raise the woman's profile up. If she's like a B or C character, you keep her where she is. And I appreciate that. Yes, he played a role, but they understood that the women was the main arc of this.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes those dudes have to support. And he got paid. Winston Duke got paid. Shit.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
You know, shit.
I really loved how much of it was just so Black women centric, because I just felt like they kind of backdoored the Black women superhero movie.
Mm.
Like, they just kind of backdoored it. I mean, obviously not, you know, it's not like they know anyone knew Chadwick would die, but even the first film kind of felt like very Black women centric. You know, like prominent heroic roles for Black women, action scenes, you know, the political machinations of in Wakanda done by Ramonda, you know, obviously like Okoye standing up to her husband was something. Daniel Kaluuya's
Wasabi,
character.
Wasabi, I think, or?
Yeah, something like that. But her standing up to him. You know, obviously, Nakia being the one who was actually right the whole time. And then for this, so of all the franchises that could like lose their title character but continue, I felt like this is like probably the only one that already was like, and then these women would come together and make this shit work anyway, because that's really what would happen under these circumstances. And it didn't feel like a stretch to me. I'm so happy for Black women who have felt like, I want to see a hero. I want to see a Black woman hero and not like a side character, not like a supporting not character in someone else's film, not like an ensemble type situation where it's like, it's the Marvels and one of them's Black. Like that, just like Black Panther at the end of this movie, Black Panther is a Black woman. And that's just what it is.
And I appreciate that. And going back to before when Chris was talking about people talking about replacing Chadwick and stuff. Mm-hmm. My thing is this. They had a funeral service for Iron Man. Iron Man, the actor, is still alive. So you can have a funeral service or some form of a ceremony for an actor that's still alive. You can have one for one that really passed away in real life.
I thought they did such a great job with the way the credits came, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Chad, and it was like quiet. It was it was just like, and it was purple. It was a beautiful tribute. And then to your point, Rod, I think even in the first one, Chadwick Boseman just exuded that regal quality. And everybody else was just around, like satellites around him. And he was essentially the straight man. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's like, oh, look at your shoes. What are those? Oh, and he's just like, you know, and he was funny. Like that part where I never freeze. And then he says Nakia, and he, you know, I mean, who would blame Chadwick Boseman?
Come on, for freezing in front of
him. Being like, that outfit that Nakia had on, I was hypnotized by that.
Oh my God.
That's a beautiful woman.
Lupita Nyong'o in every scene, in every outfit.
She went off somewhere and got thick.
I was waiting for her to show up and I was low key starting to turn on the film like 30 minutes in. Like, did she decide not to be in this film? What happened? And then she showed up and they showed her in Haiti in that yellow dress. I was like, you know what? Well done, Ryan. Well done.
Way to go, Ryan. Yeah, I just thought the only other, like, you see Killmonger in that first one, you see, I don't know, M'Baku, but like for the most part, those women are kind of driving the story.
Yeah.
And the Dora Milaje. So it's just, you know, I wasn't surprised. I was not taken aback by that being, you know, the women being prominent in this one. And people got a real, and I'm not trying to get on a fucking soapbox, but they have a real problem with that shit. Like I was in on a call today at my day job where, you know, people were like, oh, we're letting you out. I was like, oh, we're letting you out early. I'm like, oh yeah, go to see Wakanda Forever. And they asked me how it was, and you know, I'm at a new job and everything. I was like, well, I really liked it. But, you know, when there's people of color in prominent roles in a superhero film, people are going to have a problem. And I think that, and I'm hearing some of the people walking out of the theater last night, I was like, yeah, you guys, you just don't get it. You know,
yeah.
Of all the bullshit that people watch, that the people go and draw.
Right, it's all make believe.
Yeah, it's, I mean, even the people that didn't like Captain Marvel, they all show up to the fucking theater. You can look at I'm going to just say AMC Stubs. You look at the show times on the app and you see all these fucking seats filled up. So for another 5 or 6 days, you won't be able to see the movie as comfortably as you'd like to. Like you would, you know what I mean? Like if you just want to go see it with not that many people there, you don't have to wait a couple weeks. But I don't know if the numbers are up yet as we're
I know it. Thursday's opening was more than the first one.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I think the first was 25 mil. This was 28.
Yeah. So. It's saying that it's going to revive, like Box Office Mojo says, Black Panther Wakanda Forever to revive flagging box office.
So suck my dick, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah,
I'm like you, Roger. I'm tired of all every director that comes out and talking about I don't want to make a Marvel movie. I was thinking, bitch, don't nobody want you to make one either. Like that, you're only saying this because they're not knocking at your door. If they was knocking at your door, we wouldn't hear your voice.
You're welcome, Quentin Tarantino. You get to make more movies about Brad Pitt driving around.
Yeah,
and no, and the theater will still be open because Marvel kept making movies.
Right. I don't know why people. This is my favorite time of the year.
Yeah.
This is like for people that know me, I love Tar. I saw the Banshees of Inisherin. I try to go see as many of these films as I can see, but why not be able to love all films?
They can both exist. I don't know why people make you think it has to be one or the other. And actually, all jokes aside, the movies that they shit on is the thing that actually allows them to make this independent shit. Like if you didn't have these people there, you wouldn't be able to be allowed to do your thing. It's like y'all can coexist. And like you said, people love both of them. Like they're independent movies that I see that are great. And there's big movies you see that are not good. So, you know, it just depends.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't understand that. That's just, I guess it's just the old guard. I mean, like Brian Tyree
Henry. Old white men. Them the only people I see complaining. You seen any woman director come out talking about, I'm tired of Marvel making these movies? No, it's old white men. And I think for a lot of people, they're going, you're crying because diversity is making money and a lot of your stuff is not.
And it's just people showing what they can do for a change. Right. Showing these people of color getting these opportunities to show like Ryan Coogler could make a horror movie if he wanted
to. Yes. Giving directors a chance that otherwise wouldn't, because a lot of Disney and Marvel, some of these people that they picked that we know their names. We did not know some of these people's names before Marvel actually picked them up. Like they were doing things, but not to the level of when they made a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I think also they've established enough of a brand that they can now allow people to make genre films and genre TV shows in a way that they just I think they had to play the first two spades so carefully because it's just like we're trying to do something unprecedented and we can't afford for one of y'all to go rogue, because even one rogue movie will destroy the fine thread that we're weaving here. And so it felt good to see like for me, I love The Last Doctor Strange. I know it was a somewhat of a controversial movie to some people, but not to me. I just like, oh, they really let Sam Raimi be Sam Raimi. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if they let him go full Sam Raimi. And it was like, oh, this is just a horror movie that happens to have Marvel characters in it. And it was so fucking great, you know, just fucking like Doctor Strange necromancing like a zombie and shit. Like it was just so much cool Sam Raimi shit. She-Hulk being a comedy, purely for laughs, low stakes comedy. That they knocked that out of the park. The teenage like high school drama of Miss Marvel.
I love Miss Marvel.
Like it's just like they're just nailing stuff now as genre films. And then when something like this comes in that is gonna be heavy and big, Ryan Coogler showing he can do it was just like, okay, yo, what else can we give this dude to do? You know, if he's game.
Yeah, because I was just impressed by how, I mean, it's obvious that the first one was robust.
Yeah.
But it was a certain thing that felt grander for me, like where it's like obviously the first one did well. Yeah. I don't know. Was there more money put into this one than the first? Mm-hmm. $250 million, I think, for this one. Wow. Just the epic. The scope of Namor's entrance. Wakanda looks great and everything, but then you got what do you call his underwater
telecon.
Yeah.
It just seemed really grand to me.
Mm-hmm. I think the first one was kind of insular.
Yeah.
Like I was talking to Karen about this in our review. I was like, if you think about it, the first one doesn't really have a crossover with other Marvel properties until the post-credit scene when you see Bucky get his arm. Yes. But there's no like cameo of like Iron Man. There's no like all this shit just kind of happens in this world of just Wakanda. And even the stuff that happens in Oakland in America is like the Avengers don't come to this part of town. This is all like super black shit. And in this film, it was like I said, there's just a different level of difficulty because the stuff with the Agent Ross and DeFontaine, those, that's clearly going to be about Armor Wars and possibly the Thunderbolt series. The stuff with Riri is probably going to be about like some type of Young Avengers or New Avengers thing, and also Armor Wars. You know, the way that they know they talk about the blip without talking about the blip in this film, you know, even including the son's age, because you go, wait, it's only been a year, right? And you're like, oh shit, it has been 6 years, you know, as I'm doing the math. Right. So yeah, man, there's just stuff they're doing in here that feels bigger, more ambitious, and I think they pulled it off.
Yeah, because they kind of give you what you want in the post credits. Like, that's T'Challa. That's the new guy. You age him up a bit, and eventually he'll be recast.
Yeah, they'll do something.
Yeah, so they, I don't know. Like, I just don't, fan service just kind of, I think, sometimes ruins things. Yeah. Now, Top Gun did it right. Top Gun Maverick, they did it right. But I don't know. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it.
Top Gun Maverick, the thing for me is, they still kind of pull their punches because it's, what country are we fighting?
Right.
What's the enemy? Like, even they were like, we don't really want to like make it too too heavy.
Because let's keep it as far away from.
Let's make this place up in the middle of nowhere.
It's nobody who buys our movies, and also not anybody we think might nuke us. Let's just make the movie about it's just a country.
Yeah. The bad guys.
I did want to talk briefly about the score from Ludwig.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he put his foot in that score. That opening sequence. And I love the way that the scene's edited, where it's Wamanda, she's talking to the UN, and it's intercutting the Dormilaje, like, just whipping these dudes' asses. And, like, or it's so perfect. And I was like, yeah, that dude knows what he's doing. And when I think about Coogler getting the opportunity, it's stuff like that. It's Ludwig getting or it's, you know, Ruth E. Carter working on the wardrobe. Mm-hmm. Other people of color getting the opportunity because this black man has opportunity with Marvel. Like, that shit is, people always see the front-facing people, but, like, nah, there's hella people behind the scenes getting to put that shit in a resume that they did this multi-billion-dollar film.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes, it is. And that's real. Talking about that, Ryan is going to be sure with this black ass cash, you're going to have black makeup artists, black hair artists, like, because they go, no, you're going to be on a TV. And if this was white people, y'all wouldn't have them out here looking crazy. So y'all not going to have my people out here looking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny too, because you can make an argument that Captain America was probably the prestige franchise of the original Avengers films, you know, with Civil War being in it and Winter Soldier. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But I think, like, Black Panther now is that prestige franchise for Marvel. And, you know, the same way the Russos kind of like took over Avengers from Captain America, I don't know. It makes sense for Coogler to take over from Black Panther, you know, and with so much diversity, he doesn't get enough credit, I think, for just incorporating the diversity, because it wasn't just that he took a great character in Namor and put him in the movie. It's, he gave this character a background we've never seen before.
Yeah.
Like, this Aztecan background, this Mayan background, this, like, really grounding it to, like, folklore and spirituality and customs. Yeah, the white man colonizing them and shit.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was really cool and interesting in that. I'd like to see him be able to paint with a bigger brush, man, and see what else he could do with it being at the helm of this overall phase, because the Russo brothers said they don't want to do no more Marvel shit till 2030. So somebody got to do something for the next 8 years. Why not Ryan?
And see, Rod just gave me chills. I'm thinking, like, we saw what Coogler did with Killmonger. We just did with Namor. Could you imagine what he would be able to do with Kang? A two-movie arc. He used to write this dude and make him a villain. I would love.
Yeah, because I definitely want to see the sympathetic. Like, what was the thing that made Kang Kang? Because, like, as much as, like, we never truly get Thanos's background. And of course, there's nothing he could say that could justify his thing was just basically like, you can get the logic, right? You know, it wasn't like an emotional, like, man, this is the famine and the starvation I had to see as a kid. And, you know, like, we don't get that. And I want to see, like, if Kang could get something like that.
What do you think? That's a great, I like that. Jonathan Majors is great. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering when does the Quantumania come out? Is it
February?
February
or March, somewhere around in there. And I'm really excited about that. Because like I say, me and Roger watch everything. So at Loki, I didn't know anything about Kang, but you know, my version of the comic book is what they're showing me.
Same.
So for me, when he died, he was like, I see you again. He was like, oh, I'm the best version out of all of us. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, well then this is not gonna be good. So I think Ant-Man gonna fuck up, because I got a running joke about Ant-Man, how Ant-Man is always left out the loop, because Ant-Man was down there in the quantum earth place when the blip happened. So he came back, he didn't know what was going on. Yeah. So now he's being brought back in there and he don't know what's been happening in there. He don't know nothing about Kang. I mean, none of them do, but I think he'll get tricked and gonna fuck around, let that nigga free, and all hell gonna break loose.
Did Michelle Pfeiffer fuck up too? Did she fuck something up?
What do you mean?
Just like she was like, oh, you're opening up the quantum thing? Like in the trailer, like she... Oh,
I don't know. I think she was stuck in there. She probably know
what's
the dangers of what's in there. It's like, why the fuck are y'all sending a signal in there?
Yeah.
This nigga is in there waiting.
Right. He already told me and y'all gonna let him free. What's wrong with y'all?
So he's going to be the next big bad. He's got to be.
Yes, he is.
Oh, yeah. I think, the Kang Dynasty is the name of one of the upcoming movies. So that ain't good.
Let's go.
Yeah. You know, that ain't good for the Avengers.
Who can beat him?
Huh?
I'm going to say who can face him? Who's
going to take everybody?
Himself?
It's going to take everybody.
I don't know. I think they're going to have to do some like shit where they split up into these different groups and shit. To like fight this nigga in different time periods or something. Like he's a beast ass nigga. So I don't think it's gonna be like Captain Marvel. Thank God she showed up.
Yeah. I love the way he played that in Loki. I was just like really excited. I was like, oh shit.
Black acting school.
Yes.
Yale Mafia, man. Him,
bro.
And
when you see him in Loki, because like everyone heard he was gonna be in that episode. So the expectations were very like, oh man, he's gonna give us a little preview of the villainous And I was worried a little because I was like, oh man, don't waste your heavy here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just a TV show when you in the movies. And he just zagged when everybody thought he was gonna zig and gave you something so different, even different than how he was on Lovecraft Country. It was just amazing.
Oh, work. He's kind of like the straight man in that one, but this one's like more fun. Like he can have more fun with this. Like him and Brian Tyree Henry are like my favorite actors right now. Like Brian Tyree Henry in this small film with Jennifer Lawrence called Causeway.
Yeah.
Like just an example of like two actors are like big time franchise actors, Jennifer Lawrence in some of the X-Men movies, and then Hunger Games. Obviously you had Brian Tyree Henry who just, fucking it killed it in Atlanta, and then I thought he was fine in Eternals, but he was in this big movie.
Yeah,
and then
good in the train movie.
Yes,
Bullet Train. Yeah,
Bullet Train.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And don't forget Sterling K. Brown on the list too. He
Sterling K. Brown. Actually, story of fun fact about that: I in the past have seen Brian Tyree Henry and Sterling Brown in a play together at the public theater, like a long time ago.
Yeah, they great.
One of my friend of the podcast, Kimberly Abair Gregory, she was the principal in Vice Principals, the black lady.
Yeah. I love her.
That show's so great.
Big Bad Belinda Brown.
Yeah,
she was Portia in Julius Caesar in the early 2002. Mm-hmm. I worked with her. I was like an ensemble member. She's fucking awesome. And then, you know, she moves on to do this. And then she when she was in New York, I saw them all in a play. And I looked back because I said, let me see if I was at that play. And I looked and they were both in the show. Yeah. So like, yeah, I'm excited to see him and whatever he does. I'll even go see that Black Pilot movie that he's going to be in.
Oh, Devotion.
Oh, yeah. Devotion. I want to see that, actually.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess it's coming out in a couple of weeks.
I am just excited because all the pictures and stuff they've been showing to him, I was like, oh, he gonna be a problem because he done got three sizes bigger. And then he doing the Creed movie. I was like, oh, yeah, y'all gonna have a problem. I was like, y'all thought Thanos was a problem. He gonna be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So the future's looking pretty bright. I mean, I liked Doctor Strange and I thought, you know, we all talked about Thor a couple a few months back and it's fine. It's all like this event. Why is it? And the thing that pisses me off is, did we talk about time in Thor Love and Thunder? How did we feel about that? We just felt Christian Bale should have had more screen time, right?
Yeah, that was my thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Because I think the movie needed him killing a few more gods.
Yeah. I want to see him butcher somebody.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, because he's the type of actor that's dedicated to the role. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to have somebody like that, you literally need to let them shine. Because anytime he was on the screen, he was a screen stealer.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where it's like if you would have given us a little bit more of him, I think people's view of the movie would have been different because this one was a lot darker than the other version.
I think also a hot take is a very hot take I haven't thought about yet, but I might be turning on Taika Waititi if because I some of his interviews made it seem like it wasn't that big a deal. And I was like, nigga, this still a big deal. Like, take it serious. Have fun. But like some of the shit he was making, like, who cares? Like, nigga, we care. That's why we watch all these films.
Right.
like somebody else could have did this film if you was just gonna act like it was. You didn't like it's not a big deal to have like certain fat things match up with the timelines and all that. It's like that shit is very important to a lot of us.
And you know they make sure they do that shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He just made it seem like oh, they on my ass to be. It's like, nigga, they supposed to be.
Right.
Cause it's gonna be a criticism if it don't work out. Like people gonna hit you back and be like, how come this happened? But in this other movie, it didn't match up. Like it's a point to this.
And that's somebody's whole job is to comb that to be sure that shit makes sense.
Yeah. I didn't know he was doing that. Wow.
Yeah, go watch some of his interviews, man. It's very tongue-in-cheek, like here come Marvel being all concerned. It's like, dude, they give you so much freedom. Like, Ragnarok's a masterpiece, dude. Don't blow this.
Don't blow it. And he asked the character, the lady that played Jane, to be in Star Wars. And they had to tell him, you know, she was already in Star Wars. What is wrong with you?
Shit like that. It's like, dude, like, stop.
She was already in. She died. Yeah. She was a huge character.
Stop playing, man.
Well, so it looks like the future's in a good place. Because I don't know, another pet peeve of mine is like people feel the time in the Black hero movies, but not the other ones. You know you're going to spend almost 3 hours when you see a Marvel movie, right?
Oh, you mean how long it was?
Yeah. How long was the movie?
I don't know. I mean,
it was over two hours.
I mean, it's definitely over 2 hours, but I don't know. I honestly didn't feel like oh, God.
241.
Yeah, and I didn't put my watch or nothing. I was good.
I didn't either. I didn't.
That's crazy that the time passed that fast. Because I honest to God, did not feel it.
Mm-mm. I thought the pacing was good in this.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Because this is one of the first times I've been in a movie that long, and I'm like, oh yeah, I did not even pick that up. In a lot of movies, other than maybe like Endgame and Infinity War, I think those are both like over 2.5 or something.
Yeah.
But like in general, like I be feeling it around the hour 40 to I start looking at my watch like, hey, when we gonna wrap this up now, you know, start trying to do that math in your head of like how many minutes was the trailers, how long is the film, when should I be getting out? You know, you get that alert on your iWatch or whatever fuck or your phone, like from Fandango, like, well, what did you review the movie? And it's like, oh, that means this shit's supposed to be about to end up at the end. Like, hurry the fuck up. No, but I didn't feel that way this film.
No,
man.
I didn't feel that way. And I don't remember really feeling like that in a Marvel movie. If I did, it hadn't been a long time. I think it was the first Avengers with Thanos, the way it ended. I think that was like we was already in like 2.5-3 hours, and the way that nigga sat down like he had just fried a good fish sandwich, and I was like, okay, let's go. I was sitting there, rub my hands together, go, okay. Oh, and then the credits rolled up, it was quiet, and they was like, y'all see this nigga again? I was like, the fuck is this?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I've read the comics, right? So in my head, clocking it, like, yo, I know he's been here for a minute. The finish showdown in Wakanda, I was like, oh, he's finna just snap these niggas away. And that's that. In my head,
I did not see that coming. I was crushed.
And the first time, audible gasp in the theater.
People started crying.
Yeah,
yes.
Cutting credits.
Yes. Like, what? And me and Roger went to go see that movie like 3 or 4 times. And every time when it got to the end, each audience kind of acted different. It was a lot of and a lot of just crying, and a lot of was like, what's happening? It was like a lot of shock in the middle of that silence.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at this list of just Marvel run times.
Okay.
And Phase 3 is obviously like the longer ones, the longest ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to say maybe Guardian of the Galaxy's 2. I looked at my watch. Like, these niggas got a strong track record. And obviously, you know, The Dark World, I was looking at my watch the whole time. Like, that was didn't like that movie
much. I didn't care too much.
But yeah, I'm looking at Phase 4 now. And I mean, maybe Eternals, because I think it was 2 hours and 36 minutes. So that's a pretty long movie for an introductory movie. You know what I mean? But not even Black Widow, which is 2 hours and 14 minutes. And I enjoyed it. I don't know, man. I guess they like 2 out of 25 movies that made me be like, hurry up.
And you know, and they trained me well, because most of the time when I go see a Marvel movie, I'm like, okay, I'll be here to the end. But everybody else, I got like a 90-minute window, and then I start to get fatigued. Like, okay, now wrap this shit up. Unless you really are like, got my attention. Hour 45. Come on, B. Too much happening.
That's true. I think that's it. Do you guys have any final thoughts on this one?
Wakanda
Forever.
My only final thoughts is just for the Phase 4. I can't believe they've done so much with grief, loss, healing. This is amazing. I would have never predicted this. I'm a big comic book fan from way back, but I would have thought as a movie product, you'd only want to sell the happy times and the highs. You know, it's all, you come to a Marvel movie, escape, have a great time. And I'm in this bitch crying at the fucking opening thing, where it's just Chadwick Boseman in every MCU frame.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh God, he's really gone. You know, like, this is amazing. And I didn't know I needed this, but you know, I'm thankful they're given a place where Black men can go in the theater and cry. And you know, and maybe if this movie came out a little bit earlier, there'd be more people alive, because brothers need to let it out.
Wow. Yeah. It's true. Tim, what about you?
Kind of the same. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought Namor was a great character. The actor who played him, I'm forgetting his name. I thought he killed it.
Guy, he was good.
He was good. I think I'm glad that more people are getting to see him, because he's on Narcos. He's good on that. So I'm happy that he got time to shine. And to Rob's point, they really did tackle grief well. Like, I remember talking to my therapist once about finality of things, right? I still have to take my parents' ashes to Oakland at some point. And for me, this movie with Chadwick was like this finale, like to finally let this go. Like, I remember the day he passed. I'm sitting here watching basketball. I saw it on my phone. I remember just putting my phone down, like, ah, come on, man. Like, for real. But I never really had to confront it. You know, all these interviews and, you know, he wasn't in anything, but this movie sort of dropping this sort of final, you know, send off for him, I thought was cathartic for me. And I didn't expect that at all going into the movie, that I would have those emotions. I didn't even know I had them until they started rolling. It was silent and it started showing that Marvel credit with his face.
Yeah.
oh, I didn't know I was carrying any of this hurt still or sadness. I thought that was all gone. Mm-hmm. But I got to, and I think a lot of other people got to sort of go through those moments, get those emotions out and sort of, you know, move on to the next phase, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Karen. And also, I think, truth be told, a lot of the Marvel fans never really got to grieve. Like, they grieved online and things like that, but they never really got to, like, grieve as a collective, you know, as a, oh, let's go in here together and watch this thing and actually go through the process and have a full understanding that the character is no longer here. Like, this movie allows a lot of fans to kind of be like, okay, like Tim said, it's final now. Because before then, for a lot of people, it wasn't final. So it was very important to have the scene with the funeral and all that stuff, because it wasn't only for the actors, it was for the fan base too. People underestimate how devastated and how hurt and how heartbroken a lot of people was when he passed. And a lot of people haven't been able to process that properly and go through that properly. And I think this movie allowed them to go through it just like the characters did and like the people in real life. And that's why this movie was really, really important. And I hope a lot of people allow themselves to kind of let that grief that they kind of been holding on to for the character, you know, kind of let that, I won't say go, but kind of process it better.
Yeah, I think also it's like very timely with COVID and, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. Insurrection and shit. It just seemed like this phase has really coincided with just life in general. And a lot of people just kind of need to kind of experience this and acknowledge it. And I think this film was a great way to do that. We don't often get to say goodbye, especially not in a film form like this. Where you right. can dedicate. So I really just appreciate what they did more than anything yeah. else. And while I'm thinking of it, you know, rest in peace, Kevin Conroy, the iconic voice of Batman and yeah. all the Justice League and Batman animated series and stuff I grew up on. Like, that was just another tough loss.
Yeah. I mean, echoing with what everything you all are saying, I think it's a very powerful film. And it's great to see such a mainstream blockbuster film pay service to fans in that way. And not only the actors got to bring their pain to the stage, to the film, to in front of the camera, and say goodbye to their friend. And I think it's a, I don't know if people will understand the magnitude of this for it. Of this film until it's been a few years behind it.
I think that about the entire phase four.
Okay.
I think we're like 5 years away from appreciating this shit. Like, oh man. Like, like this was an undertaking and an acknowledgement that just does not happen on this level.
And it's kind of hard to do that in real time though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's what we do here. With what we do, we try to unpack it as much as we can. And then
like I saw, I'm not gonna name any names.
Okay.
But I have a friend who's a movie critic and a white man. Okay. And I saw his review of this, and I want to say he gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars, or maybe even 2 out of 4.
What? Do I know him?
I don't know if you know him. I'll type it in the chat. But he said something about the CGI not being, and I was like,
oh no, I know of him. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, that's such a white man's view. You know what I mean? Like, it was good, but you know, because you weren't crying and you weren't, you know, it wasn't connected with you on that way. So as a movie product, it was like, so how's this building to the MCU and what's going on with the CGI in this one scene? I just thought it could have been a little better. And I was like, oh, that really tells you the difference in it. And like maybe years from now, you'll go, oh, I can't believe they spent $250 million on a funeral.
No.
I saw some people like, it's like, but I thought I typed in a person I thought you were going to say. But then I'm saying that motherfucker don't trash. Like nothing.
That dude's trash.
Yeah, it's just like, okay. Yeah, it's interesting to say how, because I saw this one white guy, and I'm not going to go, I don't want to go on a tangent, but I saw this one white dude said, does Riri Williams suck? And he's like, and he's like, some of your white men are gonna say, oh, it sucks because it's a black woman. And then it's like, oh, I read all the comic books and I still don't like her. I'm like,
yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of bad faith actors out there.
Yes.
Black art who have a problem with prominent black women, who have a problem with women, who are gonna engage in these bad faith discussions. Like, how does she know how to fight so fast? And could Dormilaje really be the military troop? Like, ignore those people. Like,
yeah. Right.
Well, I think our work has been excellent tonight.
Yeah.
I think I want to thank you all for doing this. Always a pleasure, because I get to understand more about it. Because like Karen, in a lot of ways, like, this is my first time having, you know, knowledge of these comic books. And I always like to have Tim and Rod and to talk about, to bring some comic book perspective on, you know, what we saw. And always a delight to chat with you guys. Plug away. Tim, you start.
Not much. Just a bunch of, as you know, it's Oscar movie season is quickly approaching. So I've got like a movie every week, it seems like. I'm seeing Menu next week, I think.
Okay.
We still got to talk about that horror movie with our girl, Ella.
Run, Sweetheart, Run. Yeah, let's do that soon. Yeah.
We'll do that. Other than that, I'm chilling.
Okay. Rod and Karen?
Yeah, just the Blackout Tips is where you can find us. Search our podcast. We're always on there. We do a comedy show 5 days a week. If you know about Chris, hopefully you know about us. And
yes,
make sure you check us out. You can follow us on social media. Rodimus Prime.
Say that again. That is in DAT.
And I think that is everything. Oh, and we actually have a movie review podcast. It's called the Black Guy with Tips Spoil Movie Reviews. You can just search for that on social media. I owe y'all a couple reviews that I'm gonna put on the feed tonight as soon as we get off. And I need to record a review for All Quiet on the Western Front, and we'll be up to date. So yeah, if you like movie reviews and you like me and Karen, there you go.
Thank you again, Rod, Karen, and Tim. This has been a joy for me as always. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.